Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all of my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. I'm so glad it's hump day, humpity hump, and no, I did not Facebook a camel today. It was a literal hump in the side of the road. As you know, it's my favorite day of the week. I get to spend an hour with you and some really amazing people learning more about life and love and living and thriving, and we get to do it together. Big shout out to Australia, some new people listening in from Australia, and hey, hello over there. Nice to have you join us. Amy will not be in. I don't know if she's not going to be on at all or just for the first half. She's with a client, so bless you, Amy, for just being a wonderful, crazy lady. Little update, if you haven't signed up for my newsletter, sign up as quickly as possible because the first newsletter, which is going to be really quite exciting, is going out the first week of November, which, oh my God, is that next week? Holy smokes, where is the time going? 2013 is almost over, and I'm still 25, so, and I'm just staying 25, period, staying there. Definitely feel free to check out the new vlog series, lining up quite nicely, and that will start officially in January. My website is being updated by Shane. Thank you, Shane, if you're listening. I'm really grateful to all of the work, hard work that you're doing. And let's see, any other updates. I will be in sunny Florida at the end of November visiting with clients and meeting some new customers. So if you are one, I look forward to meeting with you. And if you are not, but you want to be, definitely feel free to connect with me because my schedule is booking. Without further ado, I've actually been extremely excited to meet Peggy Nolan of Serendipity Smiles. She has this fabulous phrase that she uses on her website, God's way of acting anonymously. Fantastic. So I'm looking forward to learning more about her, and I believe she's on. Peggy, is that you?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. How are you?
I am enjoying this beautiful sunny day. I had a, speaking of serendipity, I'm an exerciser, and I got up early to go to the gym early, to get out early because I have a whole boatload of things to do, and I walk into the gym and I connect with some of my gym mates, and my phone rings, and I totally forgot that I was supposed to bring somebody to get their car. So I leave the gym, go and pick up the person, take them to get their car, and then all of a sudden, a large plate of huevos rancheros fell right on my lap.
Oh my!
So I was abducted by avocados.
Not a bad thing.
I feel mildly guilty.
Yeah, huh? No, they're good for you.
They're fabulous for you. But I think that's God's way of acting anonymously. Just, you know, I didn't need to work out for the seventh day in a row. I need
some
huevos rancheros.
There you go.
That's right.
Exactly right. That's right. And it's so funny. I have to be honest with you.
Sure.
I haven't written on my blog since June because I have another website. And I thought that's what I had talked about with whoever booked me for this. So
Karen.
Karen, yes, the Stepmom's Toolbox. And she says, oh, Rusty's a stepmom, too. You'll have a great time. And I'm like, okay.
That's awesome.
We can talk about anything and everything.
That's exactly the way the show goes, because I believe that you are a wealth of information as an individual walking on this planet, and whatever you feel like you need to share, share it. No pressure. I mean, there's only maybe 100,000 listeners internationally, so there's absolutely no pressure whatsoever.
Right, I know. I used to do one of these shows, too.
Did you?
I did.
Why'd you stop?
Because I was the only one doing it, and it takes an awful lot of time to book your guests, plan your shows, you know, interview your guests, coordinate with your guests, and I did it on a weekly basis for almost 2 years. Yep.
I've grown so much that I had to hire Karen, and I've known Karen for a bazillion years, and I've been grateful because we are so booked. We're now booking 2 days a week.
Yeah, I got to the point where I was booking once a week.
Yeah,
I did my show every Monday night, and I think the archives are still there. It's under the Stepmom's Toolbox. I interviewed all the step family experts, relationship experts, money experts, parenting experts, you name it. I think I talked to just about everybody.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So give the audience, I've been privileged enough to kind of poke around and learn a little bit about you, but
okay. They
haven't. So who are you? What do you do? And what inspires you?
Okay. Well, my name is Peggy Nolan. I'm a writer. I've been through crap in my life, and that crap has transformed me. So you know that you probably heard the joke, you know, if you're in that pile of poo, instead of thinking, wow, this is a big pile of poo, I started looking for a pony, right?
Okay.
Thinking there had to be a pony in there somewhere, or a puppy maybe, I don't know. But
right.
There had to be some kind of silver lining. You know, I was the woman who was cheated on, went through a really bad divorce 10 years ago, 5 months later had breast cancer, went through that, 10 years later, here I am, married to the love of my life, I'm a stepmom, I'm a mom, I'm a grandmother, and what I try to do is kind of, because I can't stop you from making your mistakes, but maybe what I can do is say, ooh, there's a cliff over there, you might want to avoid it, right? So I'm a guide.
Right.
I'm a teacher, I'm a guide, I'm a writer, and it all comes through in my writing. So I just try to help people not make as many mistakes.
I think, you know, most of us really do try to encourage and inspire and motivate people away from the cliff.
Yeah.
But digging in the poo to find the pony, that's a new one on me, so...
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to think about that one.
it's just kind of a philosophy on life, because when you're, you know, there's that whole other thing, right? I think it's in a country song somewhere that if you're in hell, you might as well keep on going.
Right.
Just keep walking through, because at some point you're gonna walk out of it.
One day,
right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with, you know, rain clouds. Well, every rain cloud has a silver lining. Every pile of poo has a pony somewhere. So
I love that.
You just got to keep looking.
Well, and I wonder, do you really, really have to keep looking, or do you just have to say, I'm done. It's over. I'm tired, and I'm done, and I'm just going to walk.
Well, you can do that too. You can say, because, you know, if the pile of poo is not bearing any fruit, you can do that. And that usually comes with a toxic relationship. And your inside guide, your inner knower, is telling you that anyway, saying, it's okay. You don't have to try anymore. You can walk away. And as soon as you do walk away, well, within a couple of months, usually it takes a couple of months, all of a sudden that fog lifts, the pile of poo you thought you were in lifts, and oh my gosh, there's a pony.
I love it. That's a great visual. Oh, where is, what is that guy's name who does the odd jobs? I love him. Mike
who does
Rowe.
What? Oh,
Mike
yeah,
Rowe
yeah,
from
yeah.
the odd jobs. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's a pile of poo.
Everything's a pile of poo. We're just poofful.
Yeah.
So how do we find you?
Well, you can find me. Well, don't go to Serendipity Smiles right now. I'm actually in, oh gosh, you're going to be the first one to know this. I'm in a period of transition. Right now you can find me on thestepmomstoolbox.com. That's my website. It's where I blog. It's where I provide support and help for women in the stepmom role. Talk about
mm-hmm.
a pile of poo sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about that another time. But I'm actually going to start transitioning these women into something else. There's something bigger. I'm going for the pony at this point, right?
There's hey, go big or go home.
That's right. I'm going bigger, and those who want to come with me are going to grow bigger. But those who want to stay with the Stepmom's Toolbox, that's fine, too. You can stay there, but it's going to transition to something bigger and better.
Sweet. And then, so are you going to give us a little taste, or are you just going to leave us hanging on the cliff? You're supposed to walk us away from the cliff.
Okay, well, I'll give you a little taste. It's a domain that I've already bought. I'm still toying with the idea and the formation of it, but it is Frazzle to Fab. It's supposed to be from Frazzle to Fabulous. So how do I get you from post-divorce or post-severe illness from that frazzled phase, or just to, even just being a frazzled parent, you know,
right.
You're at your wit's end because you have kids that are running amok or whatever. How do I get you into Fabulous? Because I've definitely moved my life from very frazzled, very stressed out, very overwhelmed, to a state of just total fabulousness. And it's not that, you know, I'm out sipping martinis every Friday night, because I'm not. My whole life is just fabulous. I couldn't be happier with my life. And it's just,
well, I'm going to pause you there because recently divorced myself, very toxic relationship, still haunting me at this time. But, you know, it's only been 3 years. I've heard it takes up to 10 years, especially if you were in the relationship lengthy.
Uh-huh.
Stepmom. I don't use the word stepmom. I've always been offended by that. I always say bonus mom because I think I'm a bonus and the child's a bonus. But we'll talk about that in a minute. So the frazzled part I find intriguing because I know that within probably about 3 months of me living in a different space, just purely different space,
mm-hmm.
it was euphoric.
Yes.
Like walking on cloud nine. For the last 3 years, it's been fabulous. For the most part, it's just this euphoric, freeing, floaty feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the fabulous that you really encourage people to get to?
Well, I guess people can define fabulous whatever. It's just like success. I define
right.
success for me. You can define fabulous for you. For me personally, I just, my life is working. There's no one area of my life that's lacking at this point in my life, right? There's nothing that's haunting me. There's nothing that I'm troubled by. There's a lot of things that crop up that I, with a sense of self-awareness, I can deal better with. Whereas before, I used to be the bull in a china shop, shoot first, ask questions later.
We end up getting in that survival mode, though, don't we?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Very much so.
And
yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, there was a period of my life where I just kind of had the scorched earth policy, and that just doesn't work. Because I ended up scorching myself.
Right.
But it's really about not, it's how you create the life that you really want, the life that you say you want, and that it does take work, it does take effort, but it's not like gobs of effort. It's small, consistent steps every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming to a point in your life where you feel incredibly comfortable with who you are and you love who you are. So that's where I'm, you know, that's eventually where you get led to in my fabulousness is, you know, you have a good sense of self-worth. You don't depend on other people for your self-worth, that the only person that you need approval from is yourself and not from a poll of five different friends or whatever.
Right.
So that's where I'm going with this. But like I said, it's still in the idea phase, and I'm working with my business coach to flesh it all out. But, yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm very excited about it.
Well, you're going to have, once it launches, come back on the show so we can have a launch party.
Oh, absolutely. You got it.
That would be a lot of fun because I love the whole concept of frazzled to fabulous. You know, women, no offense, my male friends out there, I love, adore, and kisses forever.
Mm-hmm.
Women tend to take on too much, put
yes.
themselves completely at the bottom of the barrel, and run frazzled. And
yes.
And then when we get sick or we melt down or whatever, people go,
there's nobody
well,
around. Yeah. What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? What are you thinking? You know,
yeah, exactly. I've been there, and
yeah.
It's not a good place to be. And one of the first things I've had to do, and, you know, if having a life-threatening illness can teach you lessons, mine taught me lessons in spades. But one of them was I wasn't putting myself first.
Right.
I wasn't even in the barrel I put everybody else in. So, I don't know where I was. I had to start putting myself first. I mean, the first thing that had to happen was I had to take care of my health first
mm-hmm.
and foremost. And I had to be my own best advocate because nobody else is going to advocate for me. So I had
right.
to find my voice. And a lot of women are afraid to ask questions, so they make a lot of assumptions. They live by expectations, which I heard a very funny quote. Not funny, but I started giggling, and I'm like, boy, that's the truth. But expectations are premeditated resentment.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Explain that a little bit more, because that's great.
Well, I've heard it. I write a lot about how expectations are a buzzkill and they really bite us in the ass because it's this fabrication
right.
that we make up in our head.
Right.
And we don't tell anybody about what we expect. We just assume that they're going to do it because they love us.
Well, and that whole crystal ball thing. Like, don't you think that everybody can totally telepathically know exactly what you want? I mean, I do.
Right, exactly, right. And it's kind of funny because I tell people, I said, how's your husband supposed to know that? Did you tell him? Well, no. Well, why not? Well, he should just know. And I'm like, really? He failed mind reading. I bet you did too. And my husband loves to say, men are stupid. Just tell us what you want, and we'll be happy to oblige. I have gotten very good at telling my husband exactly what I want. Do you know how hard it was for me to ask if he could cook me something for dinner? I used to have a hard time asking for that.
Yeah, I bet, because we're not used to asking. I mean, we're used to doing, demanding, expecting,
yep.
creating.
Yep.
You know, so how was that transition? I mean, you went through your divorce. Obviously, that was any type of lifelong transition, whether you're a happy divorced couple, because I do have friends that happily divorced. They're just like, dude, mm-hmm. this doesn't work. Later.
Right.
That's cool. Then there are situations like mine that are high toxicity.
Mine was fairly high up on the toxicity level, except I was so blind that I didn't realize how toxic it was. I got married when I was 19. I was married to him for 19 years. So all of my adult life, I was pretty much married to a very toxic person that I had simply learned to adjust to.
Right.
So when I figured out, well, when he was actually diagnosed with something, he was diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, it was like,
yeah.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. And at first that was very depressing for me because I learned that I was in a codependent relationship. I had no idea. I had no clue. And that is probably what stung me the most. I think I was more upset with myself than anything.
Right.
I was more angry with myself than anybody else because I'm a smart person. And I thought, oh, my God, how could I have been so blind? But I lived under the assumption of two kids, happily married, white pickets, two dogs, and a cat. I bought into that, hook, line, and sinker. It's the biggest fairy tale out there.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, we all do that, I think. Well, you know, and it's part of living, and we're walking our paths to learn about ourselves, to learn better about ourselves. And it was a huge lesson. Mine was 16 years. You had me beat by 4. But I learned a lot about myself because I really, and I like how you're very open about the codependency because there is
mm-hmm.
something that you get out of it. It's subconscious. You totally get out of that. And I like how we've gone from expectations to codependency because I think in some ways our expectation was to have the White House and the picket fence and
mm-hmm.
the honor roll students and the dog and the cat and the you know, 2.5 kids, whatever that means. It still freaks me out.
I know, right?
I got to have a kid somewhere. And but then you end up losing yourself, and you lose the communication, and you lose all those pieces. So, you know, in retrospect, after all of this time, what do you think was your most valuable lesson in that transition period?
To not have to pretend to be somebody else, right?
Right.
I am who I am, and I'm a work in progress, right? I'm on my path, and I'm always learning. But I am who I am, and the coolest thing about my forever husband is that he was also my first boyfriend in high school.
That's awesome.
But when we reconnected after not seeing each other for 25 years or hearing about each other in 25 years, we met for coffee one night, and we were joking around, and he looked at me, and he goes, "You are the same bold, brazen girl I knew in high school." And that's when I went, bingo. I don't have to pretend to be less than who I am.
And, all right.
Yeah.
So because in
my first marriage, I dimmed my light so somebody else could shine, because he hated if I made more money than him, we were in the military together for a while, if I got promoted before he did. He just didn't know how to deal with it. When I went to college, I graduated number one in my class, and he went and had an affair. And then I got my master's degree and went and had another one, which, of course, that ended the marriage. I went, oh, I'm not doing that again. So, I don't have to be less than who I am. That was a big lesson.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a little quick break here. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty. Amy's not in today, but we are here with Peggy Nolan of Stepmom's Toolbox and Serendipity Smiles. She is a wealth of information. I'm really thrilled to have her. So if you have any questions, go to the chat room. I'm all lonely in there with my little smiley faces. Nobody's there. Or pick up the phone and call in. The number here is 347-205-9443. Back to understanding and being the authentic you. How powerful was that moment when you realized that you were you versus we or him?
First of all, it was very relieving, like the weight of the world gone off my shoulders, that I didn't have to worry about being a chameleon all the time and always trying to morph into something that I thought he wanted. I never had to, I don't have to change who I am. I have, my husband loves me unconditionally. He doesn't expect things other than what I present, you know?
That's got to be really relieving.
It's very relieving. It's very freeing, too. And it's mutual, because I feel the same about my husband. I love him unconditionally. He is who he is. And it's kind of funny, because his ex-wife sees him as a completely somebody else, and I'm like, well, maybe we're just married to two different people, even though it's the same guy. She just had a much different experience with him than
right.
I do.
Right.
So my life is blessed, because shortly after divorce, like I said earlier, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, which kind of accelerated the learning curve. It was just like, okay, I need the lessons, fast and furious. I got a lot of learning to do right now.
So how much time passed after the divorce did your body react that way?
5 months. I was diagnosed 5 months
five
after
months,
I
wow.
got my divorce. Yeah, 5 months after
wow.
my divorce, 4 months. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so funny, because when I, it was about 5-6 months after I moved out. Our divorce was final. I sped through that one real fast. I moved out January 1st. We divorced in May. And in June or July, I found out that I had precancerous cells on my cervix.
Yeah, that happened right before we split.
Yeah. It's amazing to me, because how the body manifests stress, I guess is the point that I'm...
Well, it does, because when we're at ease, there's no dis-ease, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I definitely was not at ease in my mind, body, or soul. But for the last 10 years, I have been.
So walk us through the process, if you feel comfortable, about being diagnosed, what type it was, because sometimes it's benign, sometimes, you know, it's,
oh, no.
You have to have the double mastectomy, sometimes chemo. So
I had it all. January. It was the 5th of January. It was a dark and stormy night. I was driving home from work, and it was right after the new year, and I actually had to wait an extra day because the lab was closed. To get my results, I was actually had the biopsy done on New Year's Eve day. On January 5th, 2004, I was called by my doctor, and all I remember from that particular phone call was, you have cancer and it's big. That's all I remember from the phone call. That particular surgeon scared the daylights out of me, my dad, and my stepmom, because they went with me the next day to sit and talk with them. And so we said, screw this, we're going to Dana-Farber. I live 45 miles north of Boston, so Dana-Farber, number one place in the United States for breast cancer. So I lived close enough, that's where I went.
I didn't realize you were so close to me.
Where are you?
I'm in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Oh, my God, I'm in Portsmouth right now. That's where I work.
Ah, we should go do coffee. That's too funny. All right, folks, my international friends, see how small the world really is? It's a 13-mile radius. That's it. That's so funny. All right, cool. I didn't know you were so close. We'll have to connect.
we'll definitely have to connect. You send New York, and I'll give you my phone number. I live.
Just don't write it on the bathroom walls.
Yeah, right. I work here in Portsmouth.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. So we can meet. We can have, you know, lunch or something. I went to Dana-Farber, had a fabulous surgeon. We did it in baby steps. First step was to just remove the cancer. I was pretty much staged at first as stage zero. They thought it hadn't jumped the milk duct, but when they did the first surgery and they repassed it, they put it through pathology again, they came back with more bad news, which was, I'm sorry, it's invasive. And I said, well, you've already taken enough, so we just have to have the mastectomy.
Yeah. And did you do a double or just the single?
I just did the single. And my father, bless his heart, he said, why don't you have, you know, the other one? I said, Dad, there's nothing wrong with the other one. Why would I do both? Well, what about the risk? And I said, you know what? I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. There was no reason to have it, right? And my surgeon was so confident in first her skills and her, you know, working with the team at Dana-Farber, going, yeah, there's no reason. There's absolutely no reason.
Well, and so, I want to pick your brain a little bit because you've walked this path, and for me, I've always debated on whether or not I'd just be like, I'm done. Take them both. Get them off. Or if I would just go, you know, singular in that scenario. The point is, you already have a hard decision to make as is. And then you have, you know, these other thoughts, because thinking is critical.
It is.
And so you have these other thoughts and debating, and then your self-esteem. I could only imagine how those thoughts as well, like part of my femininity, part of my womanhood, part of my me is being removed.
Part of me is being removed. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. I did not wallow there for too long. As a matter of fact, I couldn't. There was no way I could. I was 40 years old. I had two teenage daughters, one in college, one in high school. I'd just been divorced. And I was like, oh, hell no, I can't go there. Instead, I decided, because my life had already started transitioning,
mm-hmm.
that I was already on the path to being a better me, that cancer wasn't going to stop me. So what if I lost a breast? I had a great plastic surgeon who came in right after my breast surgeon and did his magic.
You know, so you didn't even skip a beat. Like some people end up.
No. Not only that, but this December I'm getting the reconstructed one remodeled. So I'm going in for a slight remodel here.
They can do some adjustments.
Yeah, it needs a little adjusting. So I've got surgery scheduled. It's my 50th birthday. I'll be celebrating 10 years cancer-free. And I'm like, yeah, it's time to get the girl fixed.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that. That's huge. So what was the process like? You got a divorce, ugly divorce, 5 months in, terrible cancer news. Your children, your children were already going through adjustments as is.
They were. There was one day, it was, they were pretty good for the most part, but there was one time I remember sitting in a chair and I just sat down. I was going through chemo, so I was kind of operating at about 85% of my normal energy level, and
right.
I just sat down and I forgot like a fork or my glass or something. I forgot something from the kitchen, and I looked, they were both sitting in the living room with me, and I looked at them and I said, could one of you go get me whatever I forgot? They both looked at me and they said, no, you have two legs. You need to get up and walk. They were heartless. Yeah, they were heartless. They did it with such deadpan thing. But the thing that I found out weeks later, because I was just like, oh, my God, I hate my children. What I found out was how incredibly scared my girls were. And when they saw me tired, and that particular day I was tired, it scared them. Because mom's not supposed to be tired. Mom's always on the go. I'm a high-energy person. And that freaks them out. So they're like, no, you have to get up and do it. Because they wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to, like, collapse into the chair and not get up.
Right.
Yeah, so they were scared. They dealt with some of their own stuff, which I did not find out until a very awesome doctor sat them down when I was going in through for radiation. When I was doing my radiation oncologist sat them down for an hour and a half and really talked to these girls. And it was beyond bedside manner. She was compassionate. She was amazing. And my girls were able to actually talk about their fears.
That's awesome.
And they didn't want to talk about it with me, obviously, because, you know, my girls were afraid I was going to die.
Well, yeah. I mean, the C word is pretty prevalent, and you hear it all the time, and you don't normally hear survival stories. You hear more often than not.
Right.
Quite the opposite.
So they were scared, but in their scaredness, they were also kind of, you know, crappy kids. They were crappy about it, but that's how their fear manifested. That's how their fear manifested. They were just, They could sometimes be mean to me because they wanted to make sure that I could get up and get it for myself, whatever it was.
Right.
But
so they were kind of like your generals, your little.
Yes, they were.
Sergeants.
Yes, they were.
Get up.
They were. Yeah. But for the most part, they were good about it. They went to. They both went to at least one chemo treatment with me. They both went to my first radiation oncology appointment with me. Mm-hmm. They were there in the hospital when I woke up from surgery. My mom made sure that they were there. And now it's kind of funny. When my hair was growing back, I actually had this fabulous memory because the Red Sox are in the World Series, right? So 9 years ago in 2004, when they were in the World Series with, you know, Johnny Damon and Trot Nixon and all the idiots.
And how do you really feel?
Well, that's what they called themselves. They called themselves the idiots. That whole summer I was going through chemo. All the conversations were, how about them Sox? How about them Sox? That's all you heard at Dana-Farber. How about those boys? How about, how are they doing, you know? and then through radiation. I mean, all of a sudden I'd show up and my radiation techs were all female, and we'd all be talking about the Red Sox. And during that World Series in October, my hair was growing back, and my youngest daughter, every night before the game started, she'd come in, she'd rub my head. And I go, what are you doing? She goes, it's for good luck. If I keep rubbing your head, the Red Sox will win. So she ended up rubbing my head every single night of the World Series. And the last game that they played, because they took it to a game seven, and they better not this time. They need to win tonight, right?
no pressure.
No pressure. Win tonight because I need to sleep. that final game, my daughter was really tired. I was really tired because radiation just sucks the energy out of you, even more so than chemo.
Yeah.
And I said to her, I said, if you go to sleep now, because they took it into extra innings, and they win, you will kick yourself. So we stayed up. It's like 1 in the morning, last game. I'm still going through treatment. My hair's growing back, and they win the World Series. And so it just brought back, having them back this year is like, wow, this is so awesome. And it's been 9 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So your daughters are all grown up women now, and
yeah.
How did that relationship, how did your relationship grow with them as all of this?
It's
a challenge. It's a trial to keep your relationships maintained, not only going through a yucky divorce, but, you know, teen girls anyway. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Oh,
Lord.
Lord. I know, right?
I got more gray hair. But then, you know, trying
yeah.
to recreate and reinvent yourself. How was that?
Well, fits and spurts, right? My oldest daughter, not so much of a problem. She was 19. Yes, 19 when her dad and I got divorced. My youngest one, though, she was my another lesson in let's not go to prison. My mom would call me, how you doing today, Peggy? Mom, I'm not in prison. my youngest daughter gave me a run for my money. She really kind of got probably the short end of the stick in hindsight. You know, her family bubble had imploded. Mom has breast cancer. She started, you know, not doing so well in school. And she would argue with me over every little thing. You know, I'd say,
mm-hmm.
clean up your room. No. You know, clean up your room turned into World War III.
Right.
I got that. I'm just going to go live at dad's. If I said, could you take out the trash? I'm just going to go live at dad's. And then finally, right before she graduated high school, I said, there's the door, be out by 3. I had
wow.
to kind of said, I had to go, bye-bye.
Yep.
I can't.
You were done.
I was done. I turned my back. I remember when it happened and I started crying, but I knew if she saw me cry, I'd lose.
She'd have power over you.
She'd have power over me. And
yep.
Today she turns 26 in a week. She is.
Happy birthday.
She's amazing. She's on her own in Colorado. I'm incredibly proud of her. She's just an amazing, amazing person. And she knows how to, she's learned better than me, even though she's learned from me. She's learned how to do it better. She literally knows how to manifest the life she wants. And she's 26
Good.
Years old. So, and then my older daughter is 29, and she just got married. And at a beautiful beach wedding right at Rye Harbor.
Wow. Very
yes.
cool.
Yeah, and
I like Rye. It's beautiful.
Yeah, Rye's gorgeous, and Rye Harbor was just stunning. The sunset, everything. It could have been a little warmer, but you know, whatever.
It's hit or miss up here.
it was kind of funny. The day before, September 22nd, it was 75 degrees. September 23rd, it dropped down to like 55 degrees.
Right.
And I'm like, oh. But,
bipolar much?
Bipolar weather. Because the next day it was in the mid-60s, and I'm like, oh, we could have had today. But she lives in Dublin, Ireland, and she's happy as a clam. So I've got two kids who, you know, going through stuff is not always pretty, but we all emerged from it in a much better place.
And I think, honestly, that's a testimony to the parents, because even if you have one parent that's a knucklehead, if the other parent can stay strong and represent and educate and be kind and compassionate and loving throughout, the children, they're going to have the knucklehead moments because that's what children do. They need to.
Right.
That's how they learn. But as adults, if throughout all of that adversity, if they still come out right, amen, and give yourself a high five. I mean, good job.
Yeah, I'm very proud of my kids, very proud. So they've done really well. I'm proud of them. And life is good.
So let's talk a little bit about the honey, the new old honey. You had
the
coffee. The new old honey. You had coffee. You guys connected again.
Yeah.
And it was like before in the sense of ease. So how did you feel about remarrying and taking on his family? And how did he handle?
My stuff. Well, the cool thing is that we knew each other in high school, and he was my first boyfriend. I was pretty much his first girlfriend. You know, I was 16, he was 17. I was madly in love with him then.
Mm-hmm.
And then he broke up with me over the phone.
Well, it's better than text.
Right. Over the phone, and it's really kind of funny because the joke is, and I was watching an Elvis Presley movie. I was watching Blue Hawaii, and you broke up with me. And it was just awful.
Right.
And so we go our separate ways because I was a year ahead of him in school, even though he was older than me. So I graduated, and I joined the military, and so I'm gone. And we hadn't seen or spoken to each other in 25 years. And I got an email one night in April of 2006, and I was going through and I was deleting a bunch of email, and all of a sudden it says, you have an email from Richard Nolan. It was from classmates.com. It was being forwarded. And I kind of went, huh, oh, my God, right? It was.
Right.
I literally, and call me weird, but I literally took out my journal and I wrote down everything I can remember about it. And then I had to pay $15 to read the email, so I paid my $15 and read the email. It was short and sweet. It said, hi, Peggy, haven't seen you in a while. Would love to reconnect. I went, damn straight, of course. I gave him all my phone numbers, all my different emails, and then I kind of went, oh, my God, I hope he
called
me.
What did I just do?
What did I do? Because I had three or four dates lined up for the following weekend. I was single. I was dating again. I was having fun. And he called me the next day at 5 o'clock. We talked for exactly 15 minutes because I had to go. But I said, are you busy tonight? Do you want to meet for coffee? And he goes, oh, that sounds great. Where? And I said, Denny's. So we met at Denny's at 9 o'clock at night. And we left the parking lot at 6 a.m. And I knew I canceled all my weekend dates. I just, not happening. I knew I was going to marry him.
Did he know you were going to marry him? They're usually the last to know.
he tells me he knew within 3 weeks. It took him a little longer, but I knew right then. I didn't have to kiss anybody else ever again.
So was that scary for you to, I mean, you kind of lucked out because it wasn't a complete stranger.
Yeah, stranger.
Was that kind of scary for you to take that leap again after all of those years? And did you have to connect with yourself and really check in sometimes in regards to making sure you're not?
The check-in moment that I had with myself was, am I really this madly in love with him, or am I this madly in love with the idea of being this madly in love?
Yeah, you keep going with it because that's exactly what I wanted to hear come out of your mouth. running with that.
And I literally, it's in my journal of me working this through because I did not want to just be in love with the idea of being in love. that I really wanted to be truly madly and deeply in love with somebody and have that return to me. And it's kind of funny because that was one of the things that scared me about breast cancer was that I would die before knowing this feeling.
Aww.
And so, yeah. And every time I questioned it, there was that little voice, that inner my inner guide that said, no, this is real. This isn't an idea. This is for real. And I went with it, and I wasn't scared. He had four kids. That didn't scare me because they were all old. Three of them were 18 and older. We had one that lived with us. And we graduated him from high school in 2010. I knew when you're doing the right thing for the right reason. And you know you're doing things for the not so right reasons. Your body tells you. You get messages. And I was getting them loud and clear, and I said, you know what? I'm going to trust it, because every time I didn't trust it, I always went the wrong way.
Very cool. Well, I want you to shamelessly promote yourself because we've got about 12 minutes left, and you know how that goes. It just goes by fast. So promote.
Okay, so you can find me on a couple of different places. You can find me on Facebook.com/thestepmomstoolbox. And just so you know, you don't have to be a stepmom to follow me. I write very green stuff, so it's good for anybody what I write about. Because I draw on all my yoga and martial arts training and how it applies to life in general. You can also find me at thestepmomstoolbox.com, my website. On Twitter, I'm ToolboxGirl. I got a tool theme going.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find me on the Huffington Post. For some reason, they liked something that I wrote and then gave me credentials to log in and post anytime I want to. So I do.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So you can go out to Huffington Post, Google Huffington Post and Peggy Nolan, and a list of all my articles will show up on there. Where else can you find me? That's about it. Right now.
Okay.
And then,
well, I just liked your Facebook page, and I tried to thank you, but it doesn't let me write on your wall, so I'll have to private message you.
I'll private message me. But you can find me, just find me on Facebook, too, and become my friend. Yeah.
Yep.
Because we need
Yeah, we do, absolutely. I think connecting with you is going to be a lot of fun. I have two major questions because we are running out of time, and I cannot believe that. One is the stepmom piece.
Mm-hmm.
As quickly as we can possibly go through this, I was fortunate to have Taylor when she was 2 up until she was 16. When she was 16, I got a divorce, and she's totally alienated me from her life. But so going through that pain, growth pain. But how did the kids on both sides accept your relationship because now you're a family of what, 7, 8, 9?
8. With 4 of my 2, then the 2
partridge.
Of us. Yeah,
right.
Believe it or not, my girls and his girls are all within the same age range. So they're like, now they're what, 26 to 29. So there's 4
That's
girls
great.
In that 3-year age group. And the thing is, even though they didn't know each other when we introduced them, they had common friends. And my husband and I thought, well, we just hope for polite civility. They don't need to like each other, nothing, because they're not really ever going to live together. Turns out that they're like girlfriends. They really like each other.
Aww.
And my girls are aunties to both of my bonus daughters' children. They're both married and have kids, and they're aunties. They're Auntie Jeff, Auntie Christina. I'm grandma, you know. And then my stepsons are awesome. My youngest one, who lived with me full time, he and I have a great relationship. My oldest, he comes to visit. He lives in New York, but he's coming to visit, and I'm very excited to see him. But, yeah, we kind of were blessed. My husband and I did not expect or place expectations on them to like each other. We just thought you need to be polite to each other.
Right.
And we gave them the space. And that's what I think a lot of people forget to do is you need to give people space to grow a relationship because you can't force it on them.
Right.
Just because we were getting married didn't mean everybody else had to get married too.
Well, and I think your kids were older too, so it was a lot more,
It poses its challenges no matter what age.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
So what was the inspiration of the stepmom's toolbox? Was it just you trying to navigate through your role as a mom of this other person's child? Or
Part of it was my youngest stepson had some challenges. He had some ADHD, learning disabled. He had some challenges that also dovetailed into some anger management issues. And there really were no resources for me or my husband, for that matter, right? And so I wanted to become a resource. But it's since morphed into how do I help women in the stepmom role not over-identify with being a stepmom?
Right.
Because it's just a gig, like anything else. It's just a gig. It's not who you really are.
Well, I think it's part of who you are. Mm. You know, For me personally, I always wanted the relationship to be kind of a mentoring relationship versus, you know, I'm your mother and you have to call me mom and, you know.
Right.
Because I had a stepfather and that was very much the kind of pressures that we had. And, you know, that was a bazillion years ago, but so you learn. You learn how to be a better you, more authentic, and teach your children to be that as well.
Right.
So
and
very
then when
cool.
When you learn how to be a better you and operate from your authenticity, I think it just makes being in the stepmom role a lot easier because you learn how to say no to things you really mean to say no to and not yes to. You're not deriving your sense of self-worth from kids who may not like you and things like that. So it's very, you know, it's inspired writing. It's trying to help them, you know, don't play into the expectations, don't make assumptions, ask questions. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to say no. You don't have to, you know, be at every single soccer game. Things like that.
And taking time for you because what have we learned, my friends?
Self-care,
if you don't take care. That's right. You have to have self-care because your body will manifest it and make you have self-care. And that's a miserable journey, isn't it?
It is.
It's tough stuff, and you don't want to stress yourself out. And why, if you know ahead of time, to take care of yourself, like my huevos rancheros and not going to the gym today. So martial arts, what's your form? I was Ishin Ryu.
I am a second-degree black belt in Muay Thai kickboxing, and I just started practicing Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh, we have to meet. I want to do the Brazilian, what is the other one? The
Muay Thai kickboxing.
There's another one that I wanted to do, but I'll tell you offline.
Okay.
Very, very cool. So I fence as well. Are you a big fencer? You want to go sword fight with me? Because I can't find anybody on sword fight with me.
No, I don't sword fight, but I do have a samurai sword.
Yay! See, I knew.
I do have a samurai sword.
We're so BFFs now. Chicks with swords.
Okay, cool.
Very rare.
Yeah, chicks
very rare.
Swords. Yeah, exactly. I got that when I got my first degree black belt. I got a samurai sword. I'm like, I thought you didn't get. I'm a Muay Thai kickboxer. That's from Thailand. Do they have samurai swords in Thailand? I don't think so.
Right. Hello, but okay, I'll take it anyway. It's pretty.
But I'll take
and
it
sharp
anyway,
and stuff.
It's very pretty and it's very sharp. and zombie apocalypse, it's a good weapon.
That's what I think. Absolutely.
I can go
oh,
twice
God.
As well.
So you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty, and I'm having a great time with Peggy Nolan from Stepmom's Toolbox here on Humpity Hump Day, the, can you believe, last Wednesday of October. Gosh. So the very final question that I ask all of my guests, it's very, very important. No pressure, but what is the one thing that you really hope that everyone takes away from today's show?
Take time for you, because you really, it's so important, take time for you to be a better you. It will help you with the challenges that come your way, the curveballs that life throws you. You'll just be a better life player if you take time for you and really get in touch with who you are and what you want out of this life and be on purpose. Be an
very
on
cool. Purpose. Be on and yeah. In and about purpose.
Yep.
Authentic. And you know what? You can go through some crazy stuff in life, and you will,
mm-hmm.
and just walk forward. Just keep walking forward.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. So big hugs, my dear Peggy, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know you in better. And I also am looking forward to once your creative mojo is done and you've launched your fabulous and frizzle to fab stuff to come back on so that I cannot be frizzled because I'm totally fabulous.
Okay.
and definitely reconnect with me then. And I'm really looking
awesome.
Forward to it.
Awesome. Sounds like a plan.
All right. So Peggy Nolan of Serendipity Smiles and of the Stepmom's Toolbox, I highly recommend for all moms out there and dads to check out her website because the Stepmom's Toolbox has some fabulous, fabulous, fabulous information. And you know how I am about information. You got to use it and you got to share it. Love it. Thank you, Peggy.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. So next week, all of my blessed beloveds, I have another guest. Yes, another guest. Can you believe it? And I'm trying to look it up because I don't remember who. Isn't that horrible? We are booked until February of next year, and that's starting January of next year. It will be twice a week. Yes, I said twice a week, ladies and gentlemen. Sunday nights around 6:30 p.m. and every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is the decision that has been made. The Queen has spoken. So next week I have Susan Wilkin Horan. She is an author. She is an attorney. She is a 3-time cancer survivor. Boy, that seems to be the theme for the last couple of weeks. And a patient advocate. So I'm really, really looking forward to learning more about Susan and all of her main roles in this life and what she has to offer us for inspiration and motivation. As always, I love you. I think you're beautiful. I'm so glad we get to share this journey together. Living and thriving is the way it should be. And don't be afraid to go out and smile at somebody today. That usually scares people, especially because here in the U.S., all of the little kids dress up as their favorite characters, whether it's scary characters or fun characters, and they go and ask for candy. And if you just sit there and smile, they might run away. I don't know. Mwah. So I love you. Talk to you next week.